Okay, gang, it's time for week 9. We're getting ready for the holidays. We're getting ready for duck season. Everybody's all geared up, and we teased this the other day. It's the first time I've heard on an outdoors podcast someone talk to an ear doctor. So we've got Dr. Grace Sturtevant of OtoPro Technologies. You can find her on Instagram at OtoPro, O-T-O-P-R-O underscore technologies, or you can find them at OtoProTechnologies.com. And she's going to talk to us about how the ear works, how shooting sports work with the ear, and we may even try to get her to talk a little bit about boot snacks. So without further ado, here is Dr. Sturtevant. So as I mentioned, I have Grace Gore Sturtevant with me on the phone this morning. Grace, you are a ear doctor, right?
That's right. I'm an audiologist.
Okay. So as we're going to talk a lot about ears today, first tell us who's Grace.
Yeah. Let's see. Grace, I grew up in Grenada, Mississippi, which is about 90 miles south of Memphis, Tennessee, and went to a really small little high school. I spent some time at the College of Charleston in South Carolina, then finished up school at Ole Miss. Then just when I got into audiology school, which I know we'll talk through in a little bit, but moved to Nashville. I went to Vanderbilt for that. I met my husband, Makaja, who is also a native Mississippian, and moved back to Jackson, Mississippi, where I am now. I've got 3 little girls, ages 8, 6, and 2, that keep me very much on my toes. And that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Okay, couple of things. First off, your husband's name is Makaja, and I can relate to that because that's a super unique name. And my wife's middle name is Levita.
Oh,
which is also
a
family name. It's a very unique name that you don't run across very often.
Yeah, we love quirky old family names. He is actually Makaja IV. It is an old family name. And it actually is a biblical name. Book of 1 Kings, there's a Micaiah and the Hebrew spelling, the I and the J. Anyway, that's where Makaja comes from. So
very cool.
Yeah, yeah. When we started dating, people started wondering what kind of, interesting, background of a person was this that I was with. And I'm like, no, he's just a boy from the Mississippi Delta. Yeah.
So you went to Vanderbilt and Ole Miss.
I did.
What happens when they play each other in football? Like, is that a crucial moment for you? Or
I could probably gain a lot of cool points if I tried to act like a huge football fan. But I'll tell you, I'm a fan of the tailgate. I'm a fan of the party. And Ole Miss is still undefeated in that realm. So I grew up an Ole Miss fan. And Ole Miss kind of trumps out in my opinion.
The Ole Miss, is it the Grove where they do the walk and all that stuff? Like, it's legendary, right? Like,
that's the Grove is a legendary party tailgate, and it's grown so much even since I was in school there. I mean, when I was a kid going to games with my parents, there was room in the Grove to run and play, and I would climb trees and all during the football game. And now it is such a huge party. It's just shoulder to shoulder tents, and people have food catered in and live bands and these great floral arrangements. I mean, it is over the top. So if you haven't experienced it, you absolutely should.
Everybody should go to the Grove once in their life.
At least once.
At least. You grew up, you didn't get into this in your story, but you grew up in an outdoors family, right? I think that's kind of implied that you grew up in Mississippi because everyone there hunts and fishes, but you grew up a little bit in an outdoors family, right?
I did. I mean, my dad is an avid outdoorsman. I have one sister, so he didn't have any little boys to kind of share, all the typical boy stuff with, but we spent many a weekend at the hunting camp. And he always took me out and we would shoot some, but I never really had a desire to go hunting. I would just ride the four-wheeler all day. And I have great memories of that. And then just hanging out at the hunting camp and cooking out and being with other families. It was just a lot of fun.
But you had an appreciation for that lifestyle.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it was just kind of an understood thing. I mean, I can still the smell of like what it smells like when my dad would come in from a whole morning like hunting. It makes me smile right now thinking about it. It's just, it made him so happy, and it's always been such a wonderful thing that I've been able to see as a hobby for my dad through the years. So he hunts everything. Yeah, I have a great appreciation for it.
And you and I mentioned this in the open, you and I met, and I don't even know if we met that night, but I reached out to you because you spoke that night at Josh Raggio's shop. So Josh is kind of a mutual friend we have, and you are into hearing protection
audio protection, and that's and right. Josh spoke really highly of it, and I know you fitted a bunch of folks at night. We'll get into that, but what made you choose that route? Like, yeah. What made you go into ears?
I mean, ears. Well, you know, when I got to Ole Miss was when I got a little more serious about, you know, what is it that I really want to do professionally? And my mother is actually kind of my role model in that sense. She is both my parents were very hardworking. They've always had different entrepreneurial, you know, efforts going forth. And she's a speech language pathologist. And so I always watched her work and was kind of fascinated by it. And she's been able to work. She works very hard, but she's been able to work in different capacities. She's passionate about what she does. And as a mom, she was always able to work as much or as little as she needed or wanted to at any given time, depending on what our family needs were. So I loved that aspect of that type of profession. So I started delving into that, and I got into my first audiology course as part of that curriculum. And, you know, I'm a music lover. I'd never really thought about before how much I appreciate the sense of sound. And we watched a documentary as part of one of these classes that I'm sure you've seen the video clips on YouTube of, like, the children who receive a cochlear implant and they can hear for the first time. Well, I will just never forget sitting in a classroom, and I'm not that super emotional of a person, but just tears watching this child hear her name spoken by her mother for the first time, and just the what that family's experience was, and thinking through, okay, this is where we are now with science and medical intervention, where a child can be born completely deaf and have this procedure done and work with an audiologist and have a sense of sound and be able to live in a mainstream hearing world and communicate the way the rest of the world does, even to appreciate music and concerts and those things that have always meant so much to me. So that's when I really got the bug. And then I got into the really nerdy side of things, the anatomy and physiology of speech and hearing and how it all works. And this system is so complex and so fascinating. And I hope we were able to dive into a little bit of that stuff too, because that's went the first time in my life when I caught myself studying, just because I was so personally interested in learning more, studying ahead in my classes. And it wasn't just about studying for a test anymore. It was like I needed to understand how this works.
So you took that, you went on to medical school and decided to, I don't know how that works. I'm guessing in medical school, you choose a track you chose audiology.
So at Vanderbilt, audiology, well, leaving the communicative sciences undergrad major. So I got a bachelor's of science in communicative disorders from the University of Mississippi. And from there, you typically choose whether you want to go to graduate school for speech pathology or audiology. Most do speech pathology, which is a master's program. Audiology is a 4-year clinical doctorate program. So Vanderbilt has been ranked number one for a really long time in the country, primarily just because of the amount of research that is cranked out by these professors. And so I knew that was kind of my long shot, but that's where I really wanted to be. And so when I got in there, I was floored. They accepted like a dozen students nationwide, actually internationally. I had students from Singapore and Thailand in my class. And so it was pretty mind blowing to get in. I mean, I still remember standing outside my apartment and opening that letter and thinking, oh my word, this is really happening. So I just feel really fortunate to even have had that opportunity. But during that program, you could choose whether you wanted the clinical doctorate, which is when you see the AUD behind someone's name. That's what I got. Or you can get a PhD, which is when you're usually more focused in research. Or some people get both of those things. I went to the AUD because I knew I wanted to be hands-on with patients. So that's kind of that decision. But it was a 4-year post-doctorate program.
So you then created OtoPro. Is this right? Am I on the right?
I did. A little bit later, you know, I was actually speaking to an entrepreneurial class, and it occurred to me that really my first foray into creating something new was in grad school. I created a nonprofit called Graceful Sounds. Because at that time, there were a number of children that fell through the cracks of insurance coverage. They didn't qualify for TennCare at the time, but they couldn't afford private insurance. So kind of created an organization like that. Then after graduation, when I landed back in Mississippi, I have worked at the University of Mississippi Medical Center here in Jackson since finishing up my degree. in various capacities, kids, adults. I was vice chief of audiology there for a little while. But I think just in my DNA from my parents, I've always just had the burning desire to create something. And honestly, I mean, I just remember praying for an idea. I was like, okay, you know, I have been given so many opportunities. You know, working at the hospital and the university has been incredibly rewarding. And at such a young age to be given these leadership opportunities was pretty great. But still, I just had kind of this unsettled desire to go a different route. And I just prayed for an idea, a way that I could have, you know, not miss my kids' childhood, but still, you know, create something new and be able to have a little more autonomy over my practice. And that's, you know, OdoPro came, the idea came along sitting at dinner with some friends. There was, I have a really good friend who said, you know, I've got these custom made devices for when I hunt and shoot, and people are always asking me where I get them. And I say, yeah, just come to see me in clinic, make an appointment, and I'll mold your ears, and then you'll make another appointment and come back 2 weeks later and pick them up. Nobody wants to do that. So right. When I went home and said, you know what? People want this technology. They want to know more about it. And a lot of people don't even know it exists. And there, you know, there's a statistic that says that people wait an average of 7 to 10 years between the time they start to notice a hearing problem and the time they seek treatment from an audiologist. So how much longer do you think that wait is for an elective preventative product? So right. I decided, you know, I've got to find a way to change the service delivery model on this. So that's where OdoPro came into being.
Okay, so you created OdoPro, and I don't know which way to go here, but let's talk through. You, I think you offer four products. Is that right?
Well, right now I have four favorite products. So I have not created any brand new technology. I don't have any proprietary technology. What I've done with OdoPro is created a new service delivery model. So, so what I did, I spent several months researching all the different brands. If you've looked into these products, you know, there are dozens of manufacturers that make similar products. And it's like, where to even begin? And even as an audiologist, you know, I had to get on the phone and spend a great deal of time setting up contracts with all these different companies so that I could look at their specs on paper and decide, okay, which ones are truly the very best ones. And I have four products that I recommend the most for hunters and shooters right now. Now, that product sheet, I intend for that product sheet to evolve and change as technology comes out. I'm on the phone weekly with new technology, with other brands that are coming out with new models and saying, okay, you know, what's coming down the pipeline? What's new? What's good? And so what I offer should continue to evolve over time.
The basics you offer today, you have what, and I'm making this up because I remember you talking about this with Raggio, but I didn't do my homework very well. I didn't look at this on your website, but the basics, you have like a full block, then can you just walk through those steps? You don't have to go into the details of the products necessarily, but
I've got, so just a solid set of custom earplugs. So basically a custom version of the traditional foam earplug. The custom version is made out of this really great silicone material that's not going to slide around in your ear canal, but it's got enough give to it that as you move your jaw and as you talk and move your head around, it stays comfortable. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't rub. But the, you know, it's, people rave about that material and how it feels in their ears. Then a step up from that would be a filtered version of that. So there's a little filter. It's actually manufactured in Denmark, but it's called an impulse filter. It's similar to something people may have heard of called a Hawk's noise breaker. It just accomplishes it a little differently. So this impulse filter that I like the best allows safe sound levels to pass through naturally. So conversational speech, even whispers, you know, leaves rustling, those sounds are not going to be dampened. But when sound pressure levels go over 95 decibels, that little valve closes and it acts like a solid earplug. So you can have these in. It's that same comfortable soft silicone material. There's no electronics involved. It's just a sound pressure valve, like a little membrane that the sound has to pass through before it can get into your ear canal. So that has been a hugely popular product because the price point is so much less than electronics. But you can hear so much more than you can with a solid plug.
Gotcha. And then you get into electronics. You have
and then
a couple
electronics
levels.
Are typically go over the $1,000 price point per pair, which I know is a big investment, but we can save that part of the conversation for later because, you know, how much have you spent on other supplies for this hobby? So, or occupation, if that's what we're talking about. But electronics are going to take a little battery and give you a lot more control over what you hear and what you don't. You get a volume control on each ear independently that gives you up to 30 decibels of amplification specifically for soft sounds. So what we're doing is turning up the sound of leaves rustling, of higher pitches. So softer speech is going to be more audible. Those quiet things you're listening for, game moving around at a distance, instruction, you know, if you're on like a competitive shooting team, that sort of thing. And then, you know, higher end models even have different programs that give you an extra high pitch boost, a wind noise manager, that sort of thing.
Wow. So yeah. I want to go back to the filter for a second.
Sure.
Does that work in the science of that? Like, is it the percussion that it blocks, or is it the depth of sound, like the frequency that it blocks when it blocks, say, a gunshot?
You know, when you think about sound, you think about, you know, intensity, meaning, you know, volume or sound pressure level, and then pitch, which is kind of independent of that. Pitch is going to be what frequency it is, or whether it's right, a bass or a treble tone. So the filter is not looking at bass to treble or pitch, so to speak. It's just looking at sound pressure level. So gotcha. Regardless of what pitch is coming through, whether it's a low pitch of like an airboat, you know, down in Florida, or whether it's a higher pitch of a gunshot, that sound pressure level is what is going to be blocked as it tries to get through that valve.
Okay. So I'm an idiot. Let's start here. Let's set that as a baseline. Why does noise cause damage to my hearing? Like, why does a gunshot cause damage to my hearing? Can you unpack that a little bit?
I mean, I can unpack it a lot, and you're just going to have to interrupt me if it starts, like my husband tells me, like the eyes are glazing over, you know, too much detail. But, you know, if we could just kind of back up a little bit and just briefly talk through how the ear works, I think that would
okay,
help us
sure.
understand.
Yeah, let's start there.
So the things that hang off the side of your head that we call ears, you know, that's actually not at all where we hear. Those, your external ears act as somewhat of a funnel. You know, sounds are coming in and being captured. You're actually getting a lot of, a little bit of a natural resonance boost in your ear canal. Just the way God made us for speech frequencies, interestingly enough. So these sound waves come in and the ear acts as a natural amplifier right in that speech range. Then sound hits the eardrum, which is just a little membrane. And the tiniest bones of your body are on the other side of the eardrum. So the malleus, incus, and stapes, they're these teeny tiny little bones that vibrate. So we're taking the sound energy from the air and turning it into a mechanical vibrating energy that moves these bones in and out. The tiniest bone moves in and out of a little window into the cochlea. So the cochlea is that little snail shell shape organ, tiny, and it's right kind of behind your ear, under the bone there. And when those bones move in and out of the cochlea, it's a fluid filled canal. It's moving the fluid through the cochlea. There's tiny hair cells attached to a membrane in the cochlea. And when you roll that little snail shell out, it's actually organized like a piano keyboard by pitch. So the little hair cells that are hit first by that mechanical energy are coded for the highest pitches, so treble. And then as you move more inward into that snail shell, the hairs are coded for more bass sounds or low pitch sounds. So as we're moving, you know, these are actual little hair cells that are vibrating and then causing an action potential to send a signal to your brain. And our brains are where we hear. So you have an end organ of hearing, you know, those ears are capturing the sound, your cochlea has those little hair cells, but unless that signal is sent all the way to the brain and processed properly, then there's really no point. So the hair cells are the important part. And when we're talking about damage to your hearing, we want those hair cells to stay intact. And as they get absolutely, you know, bombarded by energy, sometimes they just give up. and as we kill off those hair cells, you're starting to miss those particular pitches where that damage is occurring. So we're looking at time you're exposed and how loud it is.
I'm sorry. There's hair cells inside the little snail thing.
Yeah.
And is that why you lose high pitch hearing first, because they're closer to the outside?
Yeah, largely. I mean, those high pitch coated hair cells are taking the worst beating. That's also just where really loud noise and gunshots, for instance, are kind of in that higher pitch range typically. As I was researching airboats, just kind of thinking about what you're into down in Florida, that's kind of a more unusual lower pitch heavy noise. But gunshots and typical noise exposure just bombards those high pitch hair cells.
Okay. By bombards it, it causes it to vibrate too much. Like what happens to that hair cell? Does it just stop working?
You know what? I heard an analogy that I really liked the other day, and I hope I can convey this the way it was conveyed to me. But if you think about it like a blades of grass analogy, so you think about some really healthy, you know, blades of grass in your yard, and, you know, walking over them with a fairly loud sound, which we can talk through different decibel levels, but let's just say you have an 85, that's like someone shouting 85 decibels. Okay. So you're walking across this grass with like a big wide boot on, you know, the pressure is kind of spread out and you're going to have to walk and walk and walk over the grass to make those blades of grass lay down and die. But let's say you come along with a gunshot, which is going to be 140 to 160 decibels. That's like walking over, you know, with a spiked shoe that's just ripping those blades of grass out of the ground. So the hair cells are going to act kind of like those blades of grass. You think about, you know, how wide the shoe is, which is kind of how loud the sound is, and how much you're walking over it, which would be the time that you're exposed to that sound. And that gotcha. Those two factors are going to dictate how much damage you have. And we actually have regulations, you know, OSHA, which you may have heard of, NIOSH is another regulating body that actually has come up with prescriptions or exchange rates for those permissible exposure limits in the workplace.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So it's different depending on how loud the sound is how long you can be exposed to it.
The damage is then different, very much different, but still bad when you talk about a gunshot versus riding in an airboat for an hour and a half.
Right. Right. It's different. I mean, of course, I found a great paper about airboats. I mean, airboats are typically around 100 decibels. So, you know, according to the NIOSH standards, which is the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, 100 decibels, the safe exposure level is only 15 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, within a 24-hour period of time.
So compare, when we talk about this, okay, once hearing is lost, you can't get it back, right?
Right. I mean, there's a lot of research out there trying to figure out how to regenerate those little hair cells, but it hasn't been done yet.
Short of doing something like implants or...
Well, the cochlear implant is going to take all those hair cells out and replace them with an electrode array. So it's an entirely different way of hearing. It's mechanical. Yeah.
I guess there's not a different... Like, I guess you couldn't say a prolonged noise is worse than a sudden percussive noise?
Well,
like
it just depends on
they're both
on
bad?
They're both bad. And it just depends on how loud. You know, an airboat for, you know, how long are you typically out on an airboat when you're out?
Hours and hours.
I mean, hours on that airboat is definitely going to equate to, you know, unprotected ears shooting a gun. It's just, you know, you would have to figure up those functions of time and intensity. But yeah, they're equally bad.
But the safer thing is just to wear serious hearing protection.
Serious hearing protection. And, you know, there's lots of information out there about noise reduction ratings, and I'm happy to get into that. But honestly, I mean, you hear so much through the bones of your skull. Like I said, that little cochlea end organ of hearing is just below the bones of your skull. And your skull is vibrating and you're hearing through your head. So blocking your ear canals can only do so much. If I wanted to guarantee that my patients never got hearing loss, I would need to put you in like a full head helmet bubble.
Wait, so I can hear without my ears open?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I mean, I want to say there's plenty of people who are born with craniofacial abnormalities where they have no external ears, but that cochlea still exists inside. And when that's completely blocked, you can get up to 40 decibels-ish of hearing loss, but you can still hear through the bones of your skull. So, you know,
Holy cow, by taking away
your ears, you can only take away so much. As long as those little hair cells are still in there, you're still hearing through the bones of your skull.
Sorry, you pulled on a thing there and a bunch of different threads went off in different directions. foam earplugs. We talked about, you mentioned those a minute ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I for a long time, I was a foam earplug guy. Mm-hmm. What's the downside to foam earplugs?
Most people don't wear them correctly. Most people, when I'm out at a shooting event, if they have in foam earplugs, they're sticking way out of their ears. I mean, in order to get the protection from a foam earplug, and I'm not saying they're terrible. If that's all you've got, just put them in correctly. You want to roll them down to make them really, really small. You want to pull your ear back and then get it as deep into your ear canal as you can so that it's flush with your ears. It should not be hanging out of your ears at all.
If it's hanging out of your ear, it's not doing...
It's not doing nearly what it should be. And if there's any air leakage, you know, oftentimes with foam earplugs, because we have bends in our ear canals, no two ears are the same. Even on the same person, I'll mold their ears and then show them that their left and their right ear look different shape-wise. And that's why typically foam earplugs just kind of walk out of your ear as you're moving your jaw and moving your head around. And if there's any air leakage whatsoever around the edges, then it's a moot point. Because the sound and the noise is getting back there.
Do you have, so obviously this is your business and what you do, but do you have a recommendation between foam or wax or over the ear for the guy that wants to go spend $15? Obviously he needs to protect his hearing. Like, where would you start there?
There are some decent kind of a triple flange. I want to say you can get them for like $15 on Amazon, where you get, they're like three little rubber, almost like a little Christmas tree. You just have to be sure you put them really deeply in your ear. For kids, I mean, I recommend over-the-ear muffs because you can just visually see, like, okay, their whole ear is in the muff. You know, you want to be sure that they are completely covered. When you're sighting in a rifle or if you're using any kind of a muzzle blast or something like that, I'm going to recommend that you double up and put some sort of an insert ear plug in and put over-the-ear muffs on top of that.
Why do you recommend that? Just because the protection, the decibel reduction is not enough?
Right, because the decibel reduction is just still not enough. It's just, it is incredibly loud. And, you know, with this business, you know, so much of what I'm trying to do is to realistically help people enjoy this sport that they love for as long as they can. Whether it's competitive shooting or hunting or going out in these loud airboats, you know, if this is your occupation or if this is a hobby that you just love and enjoy, I don't want to tell you you can't do that. I'm just going to give you the best possible protection so that you can enjoy it for as long as possible. So that's kind of a difference between me and a lot of, I would say, the medical community that would just say, okay, loud sounds are bad, avoid loud sounds. That's not what I'm trying to tell you to do. So I just want to give you the best possible realistic protection.
Talk to me about for a minute, and I'm putting you on the spot because we didn't prep for this, but talk to me for a minute about decibel levels because you alluded to that a minute ago.
So the human ear, you know, we hear from like 20 to 20,000 hertz. That's pitch. That's bass to treble. Normal hearing and decibel level. Decibels are a logarithmic scale. Okay. So, it's a complicated way of looking at sounds, but we look at an A-weighted, time-weighted average of what the decibel level is of a certain sound to try to give you these dosages and things. Small changes in decibel units, because it's logarithmic, it's not linear, small changes can equal big changes in the amount of noise and potential damage to our ears. It's a complicated thing, but as a rule of thumb, if you think about 10 decibels is about how loud just quiet human breathing is. That's a very soft sound. 20 decibels would be like leaves rustling, whispering. Okay. That's 20 decibels. We want normal hearing, all of your thresholds, the softest sounds you can hear, we want them to be somewhere between 0 and 20 decibels. That's where we want your threshold of hearing to be at every pitch. Okay.
Gotcha.
So conversational speech right now, we're talking, I would imagine, at about 65. Decibels. I have an audiology voice. I tend to project because I'm used to talking to people that can't hear me very well. So mine might be more like 70, but shouting, like if you were really shouting at someone, that would be more around the 85 decibel mark. 85 decibels for 8 hours is the NIOSH standard for the workplace. That's the maximum of allowable that they want for a work day is 85 decibels on average for 8 hours. If that gives you any sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, a jackhammer in airboats, those would be up to 100. Duck calls can get up to 120. And then typical rifles.
I never thought about that.
Yeah, duck calls are extremely loud. You know, at Raggio's the other night when we were there and they were calling inside the building, I mean, I was just ready to throw earplugs at everybody in the room. We were indoors and you got these two champion duck callers, like having a duck call symphony. And it was loud. It was so loud. And, you know, I'm going, that's before you even fire a gun. You can do a ton of damage with all this duck calling without any protection in place. I'm not saying I'm just saying.
I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Never crossed my mind that you could be getting a call loud enough to cause any kind of damage.
Yeah, especially because sometimes I'm not an avid duck hunter, but my understanding is you might spend a decent amount of time calling.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. So, no, that's fascinating. And that's the kind of stuff that I really wanted to have you on to talk about, because those are the things that we miss, right? As we're aging, we all want to do this sport with our kids, and we want them to, like, that's what I see all the time is dads come into the duck blind and the dad doesn't have any hearing protection, but they make sure the kid does.
Yeah. Well, the hard thing is that a lot of adults will tell me, you know, well, it's too late for me, but I want my kid to have the best there is. Well, I mean, if you're still listening to this podcast right now and you're able to, you know, understand speech through your ears, then you have hearing that's worth preserving. You know, it's like until we're really impacted by someone close to us where we see firsthand the toll that it takes when you can't hear these favorite sounds, you know, and when you can't communicate, you know, it's worth saving whatever amount of hearing you have left. It's worth preserving. Hearing damage is going to be exponential. You know, once you've got some hearing loss, you're kind of setting yourself up for further damage. So, you know, it's worth doing. You know, this is a sport and a hobby where you sit around and tell stories around the dinner table, you know, years later, and you're going to not only miss out on those stories as they're happening, but you're going to miss the retelling of them over time and with future generations. I mean, your hearing is just so valuable. Plus, you need it for, you know, for hunting and, you know, for safety when you're out, you know, doing these activities. You need to be able to hear what's going on around you.
Now, you also do some stuff with musicians, and I didn't prep you for this either, but I noticed you said your background is in music. Like, you grew up as a musician, is that right? Or,
well, I mean,
singing or what?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a very amateur singer. But actually, I mean, I met my husband when I was singing the national anthem at a Memphis Grizzlies basketball game many moons ago. I've dabbled in singing. I took 12 years of piano lessons. I am a Spotify fanatic. I mean, my music is, I'm surrounded by music constantly. I love it. So, you know, when I was in Nashville, I had the opportunity to work with musicians a good bit and fit them for their, you know, in-ear monitors before they went out on tour, and that sort of thing. So it is an interest of mine, but I'm also kind of blooming where I'm planted. I'm now in Jackson, Mississippi, where this hunting and shooting is much more prevalent than musicians' needs. So, you know,
right,
if people have an interest in music, I've actually worked with some people who are in church bands. You know, so many times now we have these big worship teams at churches where they wear in-ear monitors. So I can work with people on those. But hunting and shooting protection has been 99% of my business.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
The reason I asked is we do have a lot of musicians that listen. So that,
yeah,
it's interesting well, because both are such hearing intensive. You wouldn't think
so
of it that
hearing
way, but they.
Yeah. Well, and you know, at Vanderbilt, we had a lot of musicians that would come to see us in our clinics. And it always is highly confidential with HIPAA regulations, but with musicians, when they've got livelihoods and contracts that are heavily dependent on their ability to hear and their ability to harmonize, their ability to hear the difference between two pitches very discreetly. I mean, very well-trained ears are an asset, you know? So
right.
It's very, very valuable.
If you weren't an ear doctor, what would you be? Mm-hmm. You'd be a speech pathologist? Like, you would still be in the ear?
I don't know. That's a really hard thing to even say. I don't know what I would be if I weren't an audiologist. Yeah, I don't know. I would like to think maybe something having to do with the music industry, just because when I think about what am I truly passionate about, you know, I think it would be related to the ear as in some music foray. I don't know.
So So Josh Raggio, when I interviewed Josh, mm-hmm. he gave us the single greatest snack in the history of the podcast. And he said when they go duck hunting, they will fry bacon and then they will fry honey buns in the bacon grease. So I got to know, you said you're not an avid hunter anymore or anything else, but what is your favorite snack? Like, what's your go-to snack?
Well, recently, all this Halloween candy, I have eaten peanut M&Ms.
Oh, they're the best.
Oh, my goodness. I can't resist them. I just can't. they're my weakness, peanut M&Ms.
I don't know if it's an urban legend or not, but I've heard that all M&Ms start out as peanut M&Ms, and then they just... And that's why folks that are allergic to the peanut ones can't eat the regular ones. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's like one of those internet things that floats around.
You know, I'll buy it.
If they break, I guess, or something, and then they just turn them into plain M&Ms.
Well, you know, yeah, okay. I can go with you down that road.
So, Grace, what is... People listening to this, they're like, okay, obviously your ears, hearing are important. Where do they start? Like, what do they need to do to start? Like, do they reach out to you or do they just like need to go get something off the internet or where do they go?
Well, I mean, are they already noticing a hearing problem? I mean, if they're already noticing a hearing problem, then I would look for a doctor of audiology in your area to go get a full hearing test and just a consultation to see where you stand. You know, where is your hearing right now? Is there anything medically treatable? You know, the most gratifying thing, this is a quirky thing, I actually really enjoy cleaning out people's ears. People are mortified when I have to remove earwax before I can take an intermold impression, but it is strangely satisfying. It's like watching Dr. Pimple Popper. Have you ever seen that show, Dr. Pimple Popper?
No, I can't watch it because it's disgusting.
Oh, it's disgusting. But I mean, I don't know, maybe I would have been Dr. Pimple Popper in another life. But I can remove some earwax. I'm pretty good at it. I'm not going to lie. But, you know, people think I'm a miracle worker when they would come into me in the audiology clinic. I'm like, man, I cannot hear anything. I don't know what's happening. They're freaking out. And then I get in there and just clean out their ears. And it is like a whole new world. So, you know, if it's that or if it's an ear infection or maybe you have a hole in your eardrum or, you know, who knows what's going on. But sometimes it's medically treatable pretty simply.
What I heard right there is don't try it at home. Go to a professional.
No, go to a professional. I saw across my like Insta video thing, there was some ad that popped up for some tool that moves on its own in some way. And you're supposed to dig into your own ear canal and pull earwax out. And everything about that is horribly dangerous and wrong. Just
oh my
don't.
Gosh.
Like ear candling. People ask me oftentimes about ear candling. Yeah, you'll get a ton of stuff out of your ears. But I've also seen a number of people whose ear canals end up with an infection because it strips all the natural oils and dries them out. And then you're set up for a really itchy, scaly, yucky situation to happen.
Oh.
So don't do that either.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
That might be, this is a podcast where we talk about killing things like animals and stuff regularly. That might be the grossest thing anyone's ever said.
Well, okay.
So yeah, you get that award.
If you're noticing a problem already, if you can't hear your microwave beep or like there's certain ringtones you don't hear, or oftentimes people will tell me that if you have trouble talking on the phone, or if you're having to turn on the closed captioning or turn up the volume really loud on your television, if you're repeating yourself a lot, if you have trouble in background noise, I mean, that is one of my most common complaints. People come in and say, you know, when it's quiet, great. But if there's any other noise in the room, everybody starts to sound like Charlie Brown school teacher, just totally mumbling.
Wow.
And that's a telltale sign of high pitch hearing loss, which is typical noise exposure hearing loss.
If folks wanted to, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here.
Yeah.
Do you think there's an inherent like masculinity in the shooting arena mm-hmm. to the idea of I don't use hearing protection?
Yes. And there is. And honestly, I would venture to say that people who are maybe right now ages 60, 65 and older, that's more of a problem. Younger people come running to me when I'm set up at a shooting event, Delta Waterfowl, Ducks Unlimited banquets, that sort of thing. I mean, the line of people to talk to me is typically more in their 30s, even 20s. 40s.
Right.
But when people are, it's like people my dad's age and older, there's this macho aspect of, oh, you can't handle a few gunshots, you know? And I'm going, oh, wait a minute, guys. Like, There's just, and the more we know, you know, right now these products that I'm selling, this is a retail practice. There's not, I haven't seen any insurance coverage for this sort of thing yet, but like I've been involved with a research study very recently out of Johns Hopkins that's looking at hearing health and cognitive decline and looking at dementia and the correlation of untreated hearing loss with earlier onset and faster decline of dementia. And there's wow. just, there's some really compelling statistics. I mean, I'm happy to get into the weeds on that with you a little bit more, but it's fascinating research. And the more findings that concrete findings that we have that we could prevent or delay or slow the progression of cognitive decline by protecting our ears. I think this will be seen as more of a wellness and preventative medicine practice.
So it's interesting you say all that because I've also had the conversation with some folks about the idea of suppressors and yeah. suppressors reduce, you know, the decibel level into conceivably, depending on the weapon, they could reduce it into a safe hearing range. Mm-hmm. Do you still, here's the question I have for you, the ear doctor. Do you still have the damage from the noise being so percussive, like the intensity of it, even though it's lower? And, well, first, let's start there. Do you still have damage mm-hmm. from the noise, even though it's lower because of the intensity of it? Or is that not?
You know, I would need to do a little more research on suppressors. What I can tell you about suppressors is even if you suppress your gun, I mean, who are you shooting with? Are you alone? Are there right. other guns? And the amount of money that you spend on a suppressor, from what I understand, is not inexpensive.
Well, and that's where I was leading to that because you said you're over $1,000 when you get into the electronic, like the yeah. highest end of the product you have.
Right.
And really, yeah, I could buy a suppressor for this gun and maybe get my gun under it. But like you just said, there's other people in the blind with me. But mm-hmm. beyond that, what am I going to do when I switch to this other gun that I like to shoot?
Right. Right,
like when I go for my shotgun, am I right?
Every single gun.
Right. And then yeah. you get into a place where cost becomes a lot more. What is the cost of it? How long do these hearing aids last?
Protection? Oh, goodness. I had a pair that I sent in to be repaired that were probably, I don't know, 15 years old. When you buy electronic hearing protection from me, I make sure and email you this email that gives you links to some tips on how to best take care of them, like a little desiccant kit that draws out moisture overnight, right. keeping them nice and dry and clean. These things are going to last a long time, a really long time.
The electronic ones you do are in-ears, right?
Yeah, they take up the full shell of your ear canal, so they're going to fill up kind of your ear, but they don't stick out. They're not really bulky. But yeah, they fill up your ear canal is how they fill.
Wow. So when you think about the amount you'd spend on it, then extrapolated across 10 years, 15 years, mm-hmm. however long you can get them to last with just yeah. battery replacements.
Right.
It's really a small price to pay when then you then can stretch that across multiple firearms and yeah. you're in blinds with other people and they echo around and.
Plus, like, what is your hearing worth? What is
exactly.
What is being able to understand the grandkid that you're taking hunting with you, like when they're whispering to you in the woods? What is that worth? What is being able to, you know, hear your family talking around the Thanksgiving dinner table? What is that worth? And then you can talk about, you know, if we're able to delay the purchase of a set of hearing aids. I mean, hearing aids are much more expensive. So
right. Right. It would seem like there's a compelling case there at some point for insurance. Not that I want to go down the health insurance
right.
discussion because that can be a nightmare. But so I know that you won't do a remote consultation, right? If someone in Florida wanted to reach out to you, there's not really much. Is that true?
You know, I talk to people on the phone routinely. I've actually got two different people in different places in Canada that I'm kind of counseling through the process right now. I mean, people are welcome to call me and I can help you find a credentialed doctor of audiology in your area if you need to be, you know, tested. And then, of course, if people are ever in the Jackson, Mississippi area, come find me. I was recently in San Antonio at the National Clay Shooting Championship. So I do travel some, and I always tell people, you know, let's just talk about what it is that you want. Maybe you're a part of a hunting group or a hunting club, or you could round up a group of people, and I'll be happy to fly out to where you are. Let's just do some quick back of the napkin math and figure out how many people I need to make it worth a trip.
Right. So yeah, you would not be opposed to a Ducks Unlimited banquet or anything else in Florida if
no.
someone listening to this says, hey, that would be cool to put that together.
Absolutely. Let's figure it out. Let's talk about it. You know, this is an outside the box practice. You know, nobody else really delivers these services this way. I'm all about coming up with new ways to do things that are better than the way we've been doing them for 30 years. So let's figure it out.
That's why I was so kind of I wasn't aggressive, but that's kind of why I aggressively reached out and wanted to talk to you, because I don't know of anyone else doing this in this space either around specifically shooting sports.
Right. And it's such a little niche that I've found myself in, but I'm having so much fun with it and meeting some of the nicest, most fun people. And I'm realizing that either people, A, don't realize these products exist. They think either you got to block your ears and not hear anything, or you got to do damage. And there's so many in between things. Spending a fortune, you don't have to do that. You know, or people know about these products and they've just always said, well, you know, I've always wanted this, but I've never taken the time to go make the appointments to do it. So I'm saving people, you know, two trips to a doctor's office to get a similar product.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's crucial. So where can folks find you if they wanted to reach out to you and or talk about any of this stuff we just discussed?
Well, I have a phone number that people can call to get in touch with me. And it's a Google number, 769-230-0834. You can leave me a voicemail on that number and I will call you back at my earliest convenience. OtoProTechnologies.com, OtoProTechnologies.com is my website. I actually just got on this morning and tried to update a couple of things. The place where I stay most up to date is on my Instagram page, and that's at OtoPro_technologies. I'm on Facebook, but I hang out most on Instagram. So
yeah, no, that's perfect. That's exactly what folks need. So if you want to send her a message or anything else, you can go. I'm sure you got a contact me tab on your website somewhere where they can find phone number and the email or whatever.
I do. And so, I'm always uploading, you know, whenever I add a date of an event that I'm going to, I add that to my Instagram page. There's a little highlighted
Insta
story button at the top.
Awesome.
Because I pop up here and there. You know, one great thing about this is that I don't have any office space and overhead, so I'm not tied to one location. So I either come to you, or I go to your event, or I've met people at a coffee shop. You know, we make it work.
Thank you again to Dr. Grace Sturdivant for coming on and talking about ears with us. If you have any questions for Dr. Sturdivant and you want us to follow up with another episode in the spring, she's already agreed to come back and do that. So make sure to reach out to me. You can send us a message at Cast and Blast FL anywhere on the social medias. Make sure to check out OtoProTechnologies.com or OtoPro_technologies. Thank you guys so much for all your support, all your listening and sharing the show and everything else. We'll have one more show before Thanksgiving. Y'all have a great weekend. Stay woke.